From the Sydney University Law Society and sponsored by Allens, this is Footnotes. My name is Jeffrey. In 2018, the International Bar Association undertook the largest ever survey on bullying and sexual harassment in the law, and they compiled over 7,000 responses from 135 countries. Among other findings, the IBA found that 1 in 2 women and 1 in 3 men had been bullied in the workplace, and the majority of incidents of both bullying and sexual harassment were never reported. The statistics are sobering but important, and we'll put a link to that report in the description. From this, Sulz hosted a panel earlier this year titled Us Too, Bullying and Sexual Harassment in the Legal Profession. This episode is the first of two parts. In this episode, I'll be talking with Jeremy Chan, the president of Sulz, to give you some background to the issue. We'll also hear remarks from Kieran Pender, author of the report and senior legal advisor with the IBA's Legal Policy and Research Unit, and the Honourable Michael Kirby, who gave an opening address. The next episode is the panel. There's some really insightful discussion on the prevalence of bullying and sexual harassment in the legal profession, and also what needs to change. I think it's the most illuminating and honest part of the night, so make sure you stick around for that. Just a note, this episode contains themes which may be distressing for some listeners. If you want to talk to someone, you can utilise the university's free counselling service, or talk to your GP. Here at Sulz, we publish the Student Support Services Handbook, which has detailed information on support services and mental health, and we'll post a link to that in the description. And let us know if we can help you in any way. Our job is to represent and support you better, so feel free to shoot an email to president@suls.org.au. For now, Jeremy, welcome to Footnotes.
Thanks for having me. It's really great to be here.
So could you tell me a little bit about how the panel came about, how this collaboration actually happened, and why this is such an important issue for you?
Yeah, of course. So it really started with Kieran reaching out to us. He had obviously done a lot of work in this space, and with the recent report, it was a great platform for us in which we could really discuss this issue and bring to light some of the research that he found, the really disturbing research that he found. Why it's an important issue for me personally, well, I think that first of all, stemmed through anecdotes that we've heard during our time here in law school. It's unfortunate, I think, the amount of stories that people have in relation to their experiences in the legal profession. But also it stemmed from an article that was released by Oni in relation to an employer that we put up on our website, unfortunately, and later were made aware of that may have been problematic. As a result of that article, a number of other students reached out to me to express some of their stories that they had, and that led me to really try and push forward the process and some positive change in this space, because really it detriments our most vulnerable groups, you know, our first year students, students that don't have previous connections to the law, international students. It disproportionately impacts them, and that means it's such an important issue for us to tackle and try and make sure that it doesn't affect future students.
And the Honourable Michael Kirby gave an address at the event, and he's been a fantastic ally in this issue. What should we look out for in a speech?
Yeah, so obviously the Honourable Michael Kirby has a lot more experience than me in the legal sphere, which means that also he's really experienced the transition of the legal profession over a number of decades. So he speaks a little bit about his experience as a student in practicing in the law, and those experiences are really valuable because, one, it emphasises that this issue has been around for a considerable amount of time. And two, it highlights that it does, in fact, disproportionately affect particular students in our cohorts.
So we know that it's important for young lawyers and law students to call out bullying and sexual harassment when it happens. And there's some great discussion in the panel about challenging that power imbalance in a lot of institutions that doesn't favour young people or doesn't favour people speaking out. But on a more positive note, what are the reforms being pushed by student societies, universities, firms and law associations to tackle bullying and sexual harassment?
Yeah, this is a fantastic question because I think when people look at this issue and hear about it, it often feels like from our standpoint, being sort of younger students that don't have much experience in the legal profession, that are sort of at the whim sometimes to the big corporations or employers or supervisors or managers, it often feels like you don't really have the capacity to do things. You don't really have the capacity to drive change. But in fact, at the Australian Law Students Association conference in Melbourne, which was in July, this was one of the biggest issues that we were trying to tackle. And in fact, our neighbours across the ditch in New Zealand, went through a very similar transition. A really, really distressing scandal came out in one of the largest commercial law firms there, and students responded in droves, collectively, together, in a very powerful manner, which meant that a lot of firms and their law society as well took significant change to implementing, you know, policies through their corporations, through their law firms, that made sure that partners that were coming in were trained up and were aware of these issues. Proper policies in place to respond when someone raised these as concerns, which meant that a student going into a law firm, they did have pathways in which they would be able to report and have an organization like that actually take action, which is really important. In Australia, our transition hasn't been as dramatic. There is still, I think, a very, very long pathway ahead of us. But from a student perspective level and from our student societies, we do have a very, very significant role to implement this kind of change. ALSA was a great place for us to try and coordinate some of our action. It led to the Australian Law Students Association to essentially release a public statement and to make it part of their mission to eradicate bullying and harassment in all its forms through the legal profession. And our student societies have started to take action on our front too. So on our ground, we released our workplace FAQ to try and make sure that students that were going into jobs had some kind of resource that would mean that they're aware of their rights, aware of the things that they can and should not expect, and also places to turn to so that they would know how to respond effectively. We're hoping to roll that out across Australia so that resource is available to other student societies as well. And in the longer term, our goal, I think, is to try and make sure that there is no student in the future that goes into the profession and then experiences bullying and harassment. We eradicate it entirely from the profession. Look, it's a tough goal, I'll admit. Kieran, in his panel as well, he responded to a question that was similar to that. And it was essentially, how do we know when we have hit our goal? How do we know when it's done? And the pragmatist would say that there's not a final end to this. This is going to be an ongoing project, but every little step we can take forward is a good one.
I wanted to ask you, if someone is going through this issue of bullying and sexual harassment, where can they turn to? What sort of support services are out there? And also, how can we be allies if we know someone that's going through this?
Yeah. So I think it's relatively easy, at least for me to say, is report it to, you know, the organization you work for, to the police, to student bodies, student reps. Like, it's easy for me to say that because I personally haven't experienced something as severe as, for example, sexual harassment in the workplace. But the truth of the matter is it's often a lot more difficult than that. There comes, you know, shame, there comes other really difficult personal circumstances that might prevent someone from reporting it either to their friends, family, whoever it may be. In those situations where it is difficult, I feel like the only really way to say, well, to try and help is seek support from the networks that you're most comfortable with. Whether that be friends, whether that be family, whether that be any other group, possibly the HR department of your firm. I think that the first thing that you should be doing is supporting them as a friend. I don't think that necessarily means taking steps without their consent, for example, to go to the police or go elsewhere. But it is really, really important that you listen non-judgmentally, understand the situation, the feelings that your friend might have. Each one, I think, is always going to be a little bit different. The situations are different, the circumstances are different, the power imbalances are different. And that means the response that you have to give as a friend will also have to be different. But as a starting point, it's listening, it's not being judgmental, and it's working with your friend and moving forward with them.
So we're going to hear a speech by Kieran Pender. Could you introduce him for us?
Of course. So Kieran is a senior legal advisor with the International Bar Association in their Legal Policy and Research Unit. He graduated from his law degree at ANU and since then has been working on a lot of research in this space and, for example, is the author of Us Too, Bullying and Sexual Harassment in the Legal Profession.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on Footnotes, Jeremy.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
So here's Kieran Pender, and after that, the Honourable Michael Kirby.
And thanks for coming along, Jonathan Peter, and it's an important discussion. And I look forward to hearing your thoughts today. I want to begin with a few quotes from people who responded to the survey that the IBA undertook in 2018, and just to reiterate the point that some of these may be distressing. The partner frequently caused younger staff to burst into tears. Incessant, frequent, unreasonable demands and criticism, hyper-red-penning, etc. were common. He was a high-performing partner, and the firm was at best indifferent to the issue. was well known amongst recruitment consultants. The firm was a burn and churn firm. A female lawyer, also from Australia, speaks of the senior partner who famously harasses young women. This particular person was groped on two occasions after nothing was done about it. The first time she reported it, she didn't report it again. This research began in 2016 when my predecessor at the IBA wanted to understand at an empirical level why we didn't have gender equality at the top of the legal profession. We've had gender parity for 20 or 30 years now in a lot of countries around the world. I know in Australia, graduates of law schools, there's a significant overrepresentation of women. And yet the passage of time hadn't filtered to the top, as it should. We should have a pyramid effect with a clustering around the 50th percentile, and we don't. And so my colleague undertook a survey of lawyers around the world, and in June, July of 2017, they had the results of that, and it identified bullying and sexual harassment as significant barriers to female progression, and also issues that affected male members of the profession. And they were working on that report when the Me Too movement swept the world following Harvey Weinstein's story in the New York Times and the New Yorker. And so the IBA thought we really needed to get a strong empirical base to engage with the profession and contribute to positive change. So we surveyed 7,000 lawyers from 135 countries across six languages, predominantly from law firms, but with a statistically significant sample from all segments of the profession. We had a high proportion of younger respondents, and I'll come back to that later. The one point I will mention, there's been some criticism of the methodology and the idea of the non-response bias, so that people who've been bullied or sexually harassed might be more willing to do the survey, and therefore the numbers are inflated. Now, we took a number of steps to mitigate that. It's also worth suggesting that perhaps the opposite is true. People who've experienced this conduct may not want to do a survey of this nature, given the potential impact. The point we make more generally, though, is whether the number is 50%, 40%, 30%, 20%, that's still 20% too many. So we found that all around the world and in all legal workplaces, or types of legal workplaces, these were significant challenges. The numbers, I think, speak for themselves. 1 in 2 female respondents, 1 in 3 male respondents bullied, 1 in 3 female respondents sexually harassed. It would be comforting if we could think these were problems of the past, challenges that were experienced 20 years ago and were still reflected in responses to the survey, but that no longer present. That's not the case. We found that 1 in 3 bullying cases and 1 in 4 sexual harassment cases had occurred within 12 months. And in Australia, the numbers were even worse. We had the largest response from Australia, so we have a very robust, statistically significant sample for Australia, and I think the numbers are fairly horrific. The one caveat, the report talks about the idea of a perception paradox. In Australia, we're discussing these issues, we're having events such as these, that may elevate people's willingness to equate their personal lived experiences with these labels. In other jurisdictions, perhaps that discussion has not yet fully begun. That explains, it doesn't excuse, and it shouldn't distract from these numbers. We found that bullying in the legal profession is very much supervision related. Sexual harassment spans the spectrum from verbal to physical. We found that the perpetrators of bullying were typically the supervisors and fitting with the forms of conduct. So there's a significant power issue there, the power imbalance. Sexual harassment was more broadly spread in terms of perpetrators, although again, power was a significant factor. One reason we're particularly keen to engage with university cohorts and young members of the profession is because of the disproportionate impact these forms of conduct have, as our survey revealed. That's a pretty depressing thought, but the numbers indicate that probably of those in this room, some of you will experience these forms of conduct as you enter the profession. What we hope, though, is that by raising awareness about these issues, we'll A, empower people to speak up, we'll remove the stigma and the silence, and as you become future leaders of the profession, you'll continue to fight against these forms of conduct and contribute to a better legal profession for everyone. The impact is significant. People don't report. When they do report, the perpetrators aren't sanctioned. And the profession as a whole is suffering. Workplaces suffer because talent leaves, and the profession suffers because people go elsewhere. We're in Edinburgh for the launch of this report in the Scottish market with the Law Society of Scotland, and the managing partner of a large firm in Scotland told a story about how he was bullied every day for 3 months during his training contract, and he was about to quit. And then the partner that was bullying him moved to a different firm, and the person who's being bullied is now the managing partner of this firm. And I thought, On one hand, that's nice. On the other hand, how many managing partners don't we have? How many QCs? How many High Court judges? How many solicitors general? How many in-house counsel is the profession missing because they've left for these reasons? The purpose is not to problem admire, we want to contribute to change. The report sets out 10 recommendations, said they're available online. More needs to be done, beginning at the workplace level. Not enough is being done in workplaces, and we're engaging with firms all around the world. Today alone, I've given a version of this presentation 3 times to different law firms, trying to encourage them to take these issues seriously. We all need to take responsibility. I suspect no one in any room that I speak to about these issues thinks that they're a bully or a sexual harasser. But we need to think about how our conduct might contribute to others feeling uncomfortable, or whether we're supporting those who experience it and standing up to those who perpetrate it. These issues do not occur in isolation. They fit into a bigger picture of mental health and well-being, alcohol, diversity and inclusion, workplace satisfaction. Addressing them in an integrated manner is important if we're to achieve change. So the IBA wants to walk the walk on this, not just talk the talk. The first step, we believe, is awareness. That's why I'm in Australia right now. We've had events so far in 9 or 10 different cities around the world, and that will continue to the end of this year. I think the biggest challenge, though, is how we maintain momentum. The report starts with a horrific story from a major American law firm in the 1980s, which held a wet t-shirt competition for its summer associates. Sorry, I should say, they wanted to hold a wet t-shirt competition, and then someone said, that's not a good idea. And so instead, they held a swimsuit competition, which is such a better idea. And the managing partner at the firm said of the winner of the competition, who was offered a graduate job, Harvard law graduate, the partner said of her, she has the body we'd like to see more of, to the Wall Street Journal. And at the time, there was outrage. In the 90s, a London law firm sent a young female lawyer to a strip club with clients to celebrate. In Australia, we've had similar incidents. So we've had meeting moments before, and the challenge is how we ensure that in 20 years' time, we've achieved genuine change, and we're not reflecting on the Me Too movement. It's one of these long list of incidents that have occurred that have then been forgotten. I want to end with, of the thousands of responses to the survey we received, the one that really stuck with me was this from a female lawyer in the United Arab Emirates, who I think in 2 sentences really encapsulates the 130-page report. There should be no place in this profession or any others for bullies or sexual harassers. At the very least, people deserve dignity and a safe, supportive environment in return for their work. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kieran. We're now joined by another esteemed member of the legal profession. He is an international jurist, educator, and former judge. He served as Deputy President of the Australian Conciliation and Arbitration Commission, Chairman of the Australian Law Reform Commission, President of the New South Wales Court of Appeal, and Justice of the High Court of Australia. He has been awarded the Australian Human Rights Medal, continues to be a strong advocate on many issues, and is an avid supporter of the arts, and of course, an alumnus of the Sydney Law School, even once serving as President of the Sydney University Law Society during his time as a student. We're incredibly fortunate to have him here tonight, so please can you join me in welcoming the Honourable Michael Kirby.
Thank you very much for that warm welcome. I expect the President of the Students Law Society to give a warm welcome to a former President of the Students Law Society. We stick together, and I'm very glad that the Dean is here. He is really a great supporter of issues of this kind. But if you're concerned about law and justice, which are the dual motivating forces of law, it's a very good thing that you are here, and it's a wonderful thing that your Dean is here. He's just written a wonderful book, an excellent, another wonderful book. I've loved some of his books in the past, but this one is on the law of rape, and it's examining recent cases and recent appellate decisions, but also, as Kieran has done, empirical data. Because when I was at law school, you never heard anything about empirical data. Nobody actually went out and saw what had happened. And it was actually in the Law Reform Commission in my early days there that I learned how important it was. We put people into paddy wagons. They went out to police stations. They saw actually what was happening on the cutting edge of the law and on the pointy end of the law. And That really is the way that you can get very, very strong data on which to found your conclusions and your strategies. And what I like most about the new Dean's and Professor Bryant's book is that he quotes and gives pride of place to something I said as President of the Court of Appeal when I was sitting in the New South Wales Court of Criminal Appeal about the law of rape and about the approach to the law of rape and to the disputes about consent, which is a central issue in many rape trials, and about the importance of respecting the personal dignity of individuals. My dear friend Jane Matthews, who was the first woman judge in New South Wales, she was in my class at Sydney Law School. She was responding to a submission that if she found in a particular way in a case that was adverse to the accused, that would send a signal that sexual approaches would be forbidden. And she said, none of that, that is not correct. Sexual approaches will happen in life, but they have to be on a footing of equality and mutual respect, and of equality so far as it can be achieved of power, because that is what is missing in many cases in terms of sexual approaches and consent. That is what this report of the IBA, which we're here to talk about tonight, is about exposing and analysing, putting up front on consciousness, and drawing it to the attention of the legal profession, which is our particular bailiwick, but by analogy to other areas of the law and of society. I first met Kieran when he had nothing to do with bullying, sexual harassment, or anything of that kind, but I'm very glad that in this work of the IBA, he's continued this empirical approach, because by examining the actual sound data, you can get a foundation for good policy directions. At the moment, I am the co-chair of the IBA Human Rights Institute. The issue of sexual harassment and bullying does raise human rights questions, and that's why the wonderful head of the Secretariat of the IBA Human Rights Institute, who is none other than Baroness Helena Kennedy. She's a Baroness of the United Kingdom, and she's running the Secretariat of the IBA Human Rights Institute, and she brought a real power of energy to issues of gender, issues of sexuality, and issues of bullying and harassment. And this duumvirate of Kieran and Helena has proved extremely powerful. Kieran's not a baron of the United Kingdom, yes. But maybe yes. He keeps yes. up his energy and work, he might end up with some recognition of it. Now, the question really that occurs to me is, why is this such a significant issue in the legal profession? What is it about the legal profession that makes this such an important issue? And in the analysis that Kieran and the IBA team have undertaken, they mention the dominance of power of men in the legal profession. Even though at law school the number of women who are now entering the legal profession is roughly the same, if not some more women are entering than men. The power structures, what the communists used to call the commanding heights of the legal profession, remain in male hands. And this issue which we're examining is substantially, though not only, a male preserve, a male dominated area, and therefore it's going to be people who have the power and maybe people who bring in the business, people who are very important to the economic success of the firm. These are people who can get themselves into a position where they can be substantially untouchable. And this is what has been the problem in the past. And it's confronting that difficulty that the law presents in dealing with this issue. It's not the only difficulty. Another difficulty is feeling that you can make a complaint and not suffer. Because if you're a person who complains, then will that lead you to be stigmatized as a person who's forever complaining? I love the fact that the report that Kieran's written is illustrated on almost every page with a quote, and every quote is terribly upsetting and arresting. It's really the excuses and attitudes that have been put forward in response to the issue that we're looking at. And many young women who are the subjects, as we saw in the statistics of many of the complaints, have to ask themselves, what if I do something about this? Now, when I was the age of most of the people in the audience, thereafter, I've said many times, I was never really bullied, certainly not sexually harassed. But as I was walking here from Redfern Station to get to this session tonight, I thought, well, actually, I was being sexually harassed. I was sexually harassed as a young gay man. I was being harassed by an image or an attitude to sexuality that demanded, not only demanded that it be only available for straight people, but demanded that I pretend that I was straight, and that I pretend and keep silent, even to my parents and even to my family, that I was not straight. And that, looking back on it, you know, this is an epiphany I had this afternoon between Redfern Station and the Sydney Law School. The lesson of that is that we're all harassed. I certainly was harassed on occasions by judges. Some judges are very grumpy. I was never grumpy because I was very conscious of how horrible some judges had been to me. But harassment and bullying, as this report has shown, very common features of the experience of working in the law. And that's why they are a concern for the IBA, and that's why Kieran's background and interests and the earlier work that was done in the IBA, it has an empirical twist, and it is not something that is denying the reality of sexual engagement in the workplace or anywhere else. It is simply saying that that has to be on a basis of consent, which respects the dignity and equality of everybody, and it doesn't need people to really have complaints made about them. But if the case is a follow-up complaint, then the complaint should be made, and they should be made without victimisation of the complainant. So I congratulate Kieran. This is the fourth time he's given that speech today, and it didn't give any indication that he was bored with it for his own speech. It was dynamic, interesting, and engaged. And I'm very glad that our Australian lawyer, a young Australian lawyer, is leading this project right around the world.